Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. HRN is food radio supported by you. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
This episode is brought to you by PASA Sustainable Agriculture. Register now for PASA's 2024 conference in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. Don't miss over 70 educational sessions on farming and food systems, plus an expansive trade show. Learn more at pasafarming.org/HRN2024.
I'm Allison Kane, and welcome to In the Sauce, a podcast about building consumer brands from the ground up. I love doing this show because I get to interview everyone from production gurus to marketing and social media mavens, anyone who can guide me on this crazy journey. This is the story of building Haven's Kitchen sauces, but it's also the story of every growing brand because we're all in the sauce. Today, I'm speaking with Leah Haberman, a marketing consultant for brands including AT&T, Robert Half, Riot Games, Viral Nation, and more. Leah is an instructor of influencer marketing and social media marketing at UCLA Extension and writes a weekly creator economy newsletter called ICYMI, in case you missed it, to help over 15,000 industry pros stay up to date on platform news, social trends, and brand campaigns. My whole team, I think you know this, Leah, is obsessed with the newsletter and everything that you write on LinkedIn. And I'm not surprised at all that Leah was named a top creator economy voice by Business Insider. So welcome, and I'm thrilled to have you here.
Thank you. I'm thrilled to be here.
Yes, we are kicking off the new year talking about social media, really. And I think when I reached out to you, you had written something, and it was weird because it was like we were talking about it in the office that day too. And this kind of idea that on a macro level, social media now just feels like media, like period. And It doesn't feel social so much anymore as it feels like, you know, a place where you would go to advertise, but you can't look like you're advertising. It has to look super authentic and organic, et cetera. So you're the expert. What's going on?
Well, I mean, social, there's still social, but I think social between, you know, friends and family and regular people has kind of disappeared into these smaller spaces, into communities, into DMs, into stories. You know, we had the head of Instagram telling us that is where people are going on Instagram, regular people. What's taken over the feed on Instagram, on TikTok, on YouTube is creators and brands. But I think to your point, it needs to look like, you know, the original version of social that was very kind of relatable, real, raw, that people wanted to see. So I think creators and brands especially, are trying to reimagine how they show up on social in a way that is, like you said, is it's really media, it's entertainment. I mean, I think that's one thing that we've seen, especially post-pandemic. People want to be entertained. People want to scroll. They want to laugh. They want to be surprised. They just want to pass time. You know, I think people want to be entertained when they're online.
Is the thing. You know, before we were recording, I was telling you sort of about my industry and who's listening. And, you know, it's like yet another hard thing. I feel like, honestly, like, brands have to not only kind of be everywhere, but we have to be everywhere and engaged. Like everyone, I guess the social part is that you put out this entertainment, let's say, for your community, and then you have to be in this conversation. It's not passive. It's not like, yay, we put it out there and now on to the next thing. It requires a lot of, you know, like hand holding, which is a lot for a small team and a small business. And yet it seems like the only real path to building that community because there is so much noise out there.
So yes, at the same time as you're building a business, you're essentially shooting a reality series that's mm-hmm. running concurrently along with your business. So you're running a media mm-hmm. business and you're running
right.
the business that you have. I think it, you know, depending on how comfortable you are with TikTok, with picking up your phone and shooting video, with not being too precious about how mm-hmm. the content comes across and kind of leaving that very produced, polished, orchestrated moments behind, I think you're going to have a much easier time of this than if you came up with kind of thinking about, you know, this is a campaign and we want it to look good and how's it going to roll out right. and, you know, we're going to do it with a full-on production. This is very much, we are in like the reality series era, and there are some brands that do it really well. Primarily, I would say we're seeing it on TikTok, you know, first, but I think that mm-hmm. it is going to spread across the other platforms as well.
So let's dive into that a little bit because I was reading about your thoughts for 24 and it's yeah. entertainment, episodic content, that TV show kind of thing, whether it's, mm-hmm. you know, more dramatic, like, oh no, what's going to happen with the machine that needs to get fixed that makes our puffs, or, you know, more right. newsy about what's happening, or, you know, something that is a hook that kind of resembles a TV show that we're sort of used to. But something you said that was where I was like, uh-oh, was that kind of recurring, predictable timing. I think that's what trips up brands sometimes. You know, it's like having something that is consistent, that people know to tune into, that sort of releases in a fairly sort of mechanized way. Is that really important?
To me, that's almost, that's kind of a benefit. The consistency keeps you on a schedule so that you're not randomly posting. And yeah, it was kind of pointing back to that idea of look at the elements of what people loved about TV, whether it was reality TV or weekly series, and pick up on those elements. So, you know, you've got recurring characters, you've got jingles, or like on TikTok, we're mm-hmm. calling them different things, trending audio, sonic booms, but, you know, sounds or music people love to hear. There's a familiar set. There's a theme that runs throughout it. And you mm-hmm. do have this regular weekly episode slot or content drop. You know, I think the other idea, another theme that we're seeing is more quality content, but less of it. So I do think in mm-hmm. that you're putting out maybe once a week on a consistent schedule, right. but maybe you're only putting out once a week as opposed to you're putting out every single day, or you're putting out
yep.
content three times a day. And so I think it's like, it's trying to make it more manageable, trying to think about, you know, and when I say like kind of quality content, that does not mean more produced. I think it's just, you've maybe thought about it a little bit more, or you've yeah. been a little bit more intentional about, okay, what is the story that we're telling? And there's a brand on TikTok called Set Active. And if you look at Set Active's TikTok account, it's essentially what The Office would look like if it was now and on TikTok. You see the founder, Amazing. You see the other characters in the office. There are, you know, things happen as they do every day in an office. And then sometimes mm-hmm. things don't really happen and it's, you know, not quite as exciting or not quite as funny. Yeah. So that's how I see it.
And so, okay, so that's helpful because I think for a minute there, TikTok, like when we all sort of were like, oh, wow, we got to be on this thing. It was just like, go, go, go. Something will hit, something will click. You know, now this does feel a little bit more manageable. This is probably a little, to your point, you have to have a little bit more of a sense of humor, a little bit more originality, you know, you can't be futzing around with like trending things that seem to have gone viral elsewhere. You know, fortunately, I think for brands, we've all realized that like virality does not actually lead to, you know, sustained increase in sales. So I think that is no longer a goal.
It was attention does not equal intention, you know, intention to purchase. Right. And I just thought that was a really great quote. And I think everybody should carry that into 2024, speaking to what you're saying about virality not necessarily leading to sales. Attention does not equal intention. So
yeah, that's a really, really good one. Yeah, there's been a lot of discussion. I mean, I got a shout out Ashley on my team who like 2 years ago was like, I look at saves, I look at forwards, I'm just not looking at followers. And I, being the founder, was like, but and she held fast. And so I guess that's, you know, good for her. I hope she's listening, because yay, Ashley. So we do. We have to make these little mini TV shows and find ways. I was listening to something you said, and you were talking about it. If you were a bathing suit brand, not necessarily making a TV show about your bathing suits, but making a TV show about pools around the world or something like that, where it's, so what's the essence of that for people? Because it's almost like there's a lot of founders telling their stories on social media, and I can't imagine that people aren't a little bored of that. So what do you think is separating kind of like the great ones from the ones that maybe aren't as compelling? Is it the people? Is it the personalities? Like, what do you think it is?
I mean, personality definitely helps. I think story helps. I think there's a lot of different ways to tell your story. I think the founder story is great. I still think, you know, the hero's journey, people love to cheer other people on. So I don't think, you know, the founder story will ever go away as kind of a storytelling format to get your brand story across. But I think it's thinking about, nobody wants an infomercial. That's essentially, you know, if you get nothing else from this, it's like, do not make an infomercial. What you're trying to do is think about almost more kind of a product placement. And when I was, you know, that conversation about bathing suits, for example, it's thinking about where would our product be? Where would it be used? Who would be using it? In what context? Are there other things people might be doing? And how can we tap into that? What are other circumstances around our product or our service that people might be participating in that we can kind of, you know, like lean into as a way to tell our story? Can you picture us here? Can you imagine us on a picnic, on vacation, you know, in a kid's backpack? Just thinking about other ways to tell the story versus, you know, just a buy this product, here's our product, you know, new launch from us. I think it's just the constant sell is just, people are tuning it out. It's white noise.
Yeah. And I mean, even, you know, we were talking about, so we made a YouTube channel in COVID and, you know, it gets views. It doesn't get, you know, tens of thousands of views. We had one crazy, you know, top of the page, I don't know, whatever they call it. Like when we did something about choosing cookware, it had nothing to do with cooking with our products at all. It was just, I basically was like, this is the pan you need. This is the, you know, Dutch oven you need. And this is how you choose stainless versus nonstick or whatever it is. And it just went bonanza. But, you know, part of me is like, oh, we weren't really selling, but we were perhaps, it was a little bit too tightly wound, I guess, is the word I would say. It was maybe a little bit more infomercially than casually just cooking in our kitchen and using some sauce. You know, it was formulaic because we felt like it should be. Now I'm sort of like, maybe, you know, maybe we missed the mark on that a little bit, but I'm also kind of curious about, let's say, you know, you're a brand and you make this good content and it's not tightly wound and it's good. How is it getting out there? Like how is the platform, is the algorithm kind of rewarding that type of content? Is it, I mean, how do we compete with, you know, the Mr. Beasts of the world, I guess? And that's the $89 gazillion question.
Right. I mean, you're not competing with Mr. Beast. Like, that's the first, like, none of us are competing. Nobody's competing with Mr. Beast. I think he is just, right. He's so far ahead. Like, nobody's catching up. And I think it's really platform dependent. You know, right now, for example, TikTok is very into over 60 seconds. They want you on TikTok Shop. They want you live streaming. They want a hook within the first 3 seconds and they want a face on camera. They just released an ad report where, you know, having a face on camera right from in the thumbnail and from the get-go increases recall, increases, you know, the power of the hook at the beginning of the video. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's super specific. Instagram, like, and again, like I said, it's platform specific. Instagram, you know, I think we're all struggling a little bit just to figure out, you know, what part of Instagram is a priority this year. I think last year going into, you know, whether it was 2022, 2023, I think it was really clear. Like Instagram was really pushing Reels hard. I think this year they've really pulled back. I think this year they introduced broadcast channels. They introduced threads. They've introduced notes. They're introducing so many features for stories. They've introduced a lot of, you know, close friends features. So you can have close friends, you know, posts in the feed. So I think, you know, some of that speaks to Instagram is almost like nurturing these smaller, closer communities that creators and individuals are creating. Can brands lean into that? I know a couple of people, you know, small companies or startups were excited about the idea of close friends posts in the feed, because that's something that you can offer to like VIP customers, for example. Right. You can always find some element of Instagram that you can offer to like a small select group of customers that you kind of offer as like an added bonus. So I think that's Instagram. And it's not exactly the same as TikTok. I think, you know, previously last year, we would have looked at like, okay, well, they're pretty much all the same. Everybody just wants short form video under 60 seconds. Right. I think this year we're starting to see a little bit of a shift in the ways that people are going. YouTube, you know, YouTube Shorts still doing really well. I do think creators are starting to see it's harder to monetize Shorts. You know, I think in terms of as a brand, I would look at YouTube. I still think like YouTube's goldmine is its long form content and its ability to tell bigger, better, more in-depth stories with more nuance and detail. So, you know, and that requires, like you said, that does require more work. It requires more scripting, more production, a little bit more editing maybe to create a long form video. You know, I think people are using it as a search engine. Teenagers love it. I think if you can think of a way to show up on YouTube that makes sense for your brand in a long form content format, do you have a cooking series?
Yes.
Anything, I think YouTube especially, I mean, listen, YouTube, you know, of course there was television, but after television, the idea of doing like a weekly episodic series, certainly that has been kind of in YouTube's DNA from the beginning. So anything that you can do that's kind of like a recurring series. What I would also say is just for search engine purposes, for branding purposes, I would do a couple of very basic, here's who we are as a company. Here's our product. I would maybe bury those. I wouldn't necessarily, you know, put that playlist at the top of my YouTube page, but I would put some very kind of like basic informational content about my company, about me as a founder, on YouTube because it's just such a strong search engine and, you know, tied into Google search results that I think it's just a really good idea to look at it as it's both a streaming entertainment platform, but it is also like a very powerful search engine.
Yeah. Amazing. Okay. That was just, I took so many notes that like nervous that like you can hear my clicking on my microphone. Okay. We're going to take a quick break and we're going to come back and talk about people. We'll be right back.
Want to cultivate farms and food systems that nourish, heal, and empower? Register now for PASA's 2024 Sustainable Agriculture Conference. Discover resources, services, and products at our expansive trade show and explore more than 70 educational sessions on climate smart practices, food justice, soil health, and more. Featuring a dynamic lineup of speakers, including Reginaldo Hasle Marroquin, farmer and founder of the Regenerative Agriculture Alliance and CEO of Tree Range Farms, and Reverend Dr. Heber M. Brown III, pastor, community organizer, and founder of the Black Church Food Security Network. Find your community at PASA's 33rd annual conference in Lancaster, Pennsylvania on February 8th through 10th. Register now at pasafarming.org/HRN2024. That's PASA farming.org/HRN2024.
I'm back with Leah Haberman, and we are talking about social media, YouTube streaming, all of it. And you started talking about this a little bit before, you know, this move away from overly promotional, sort of glossy, what I think of as like 2014 Instagram, very curated, into a little bit grittier, you know, faces, people, organic, you know, just like, oh, here I am. I happen to be working at this company and this is our new seltzer that we just launched kind of vibe. I guess there are a couple things as a brand that we think about. One is if those people leave the company. Two is, you know, basically asking your social team to become faces of the company if the, you know, founder of the company isn't quite ready to do that or isn't, you know, particularly good at it. And I think three, I think some of us are like, isn't that kind of already, you know, Midday Squares, for example, they looked like they were a reality show and they happened to be a chocolate company. It feels a little bit like the founder sort of saying like, it's really hard. I can't, you know, the shipment isn't coming in. And like, I don't know if we're going to, there's something that feels a little bit tired of that, of about that to some of the people running the brands, but maybe that's just us because we're exhausted. So can you speak to those sort of three concerns that we have?
Well, I mean, let's start with the last one first and just say like, they're not creating content for you. In the same way that, you know, you shouldn't be worried about what are my friends and family going to think of this content? Or if I put myself on camera, what are people going to be thinking about me? The content is not for them. The content is for your customers or your potential customers. So if other founders or people in the industry don't love the content or think, oh, this is performative or this is played out, the content's not for you. So, you know, in the politest way possible, it's like, it doesn't matter what you think. What matters is if it's resonating with their audience and they're seeing engagement or they're seeing sales, conversions, like it works for them. You know, like whether or not, okay, I haven't checked them out recently. I think I actually, I might follow them. I can't remember if it's on Instagram or TikTok. You know, it's like maybe the, oh no, is the shipment coming in might be overplayed, but I haven't seen it recently, so I can't comment on that. But again, it's like...
No, and not to call out them. I'm just saying I feel like every founder video has this like, this was really hard and you don't know how hard it is to run a business. And oh, yay, here's the chocolate, but we're not using this oil anymore. Like, I guess maybe I'm just jaded.
I think it's thinking about your audience. And so if your audience is you're talking to other founders to encourage them, you know, maybe your company is such a success that You're no longer talking to customers. You're no longer talking to potential investors. You're talking to other founders to be more of kind of a thought leader or like source of inspiration. Then you think about that. If you're talking to customers, maybe customers, like I said, they love that hero's journey. If you're talking to investors, then you do start seeding more success stories or small wins. Right. It's really thinking about the intended audience and the perception that you want to create. And so like, what does that intended audience need to hear? And near misses, failures, like, is the shipment going to show up, is maybe great for the customer that's like, oh, wow. But, you know, maybe it's not great for investors who will think like, this sounds like a
hot mess.
What's
wrong with your supply chain? Yeah.
Yeah. So it really depends on who the intended audience is. But I think just the idea of the great thing about, I would say, like startups, small businesses, solopreneurs is like, we are seeing this trend, whether you call it like, I love this, you know, people have been talking about like people are the new logos or faces are the new logos. I think there's this move away from, you know, hearing from a brand and wanting to hear from a person. You know, customers, there was a study that came out recently where it was like people trust friends, family, and influencers over information coming from a brand. So I think if you're a founder, and if you're comfortable on social, then that's great. You put your face out there. You're kind of like one step ahead of the game. Certainly, you know, more so than a large company that doesn't necessarily have a founder or, you know, is run by a board of directors. Like there's not necessarily somebody, you know, at the front of that company. If you're not comfortable being on there. So I think there's different ways to think about it. It might be your social team. It might be people within the company. I think you can designate people within the company that it doesn't necessarily have to be the social team, doesn't necessarily have to be, I don't know, the customer service person. It could be like a co-founder, another executive, you know, somebody that you're comfortable with, and they don't have to assume the role of like, I am spokesperson for this company. I think it's just, if it makes sense, and this is kind of part of the view or like the little slice of life that you want to give of your company, then that works. But you certainly, I do agree with you to the point where you're not giving them the keys to the kingdom and like pretending they're the founder or like pretending they're running the company. I think it's like, it's got to be very contextual in what their role is. And so it's like, hey, you know, Allie's too busy running the company. She's handed her phone over to me. And so we're going to take a walk around, you know, like the manufacturing plant today or something like that. And so keeping it like very honest and kind of contextual to what is happening. But I think just that idea that like you do have an advantage in that, like, it is your company, it is your story. Show up as yourself as much as possible if you're comfortable. You know, doing that. If not your social team, if not somebody else you designate in the company, if not potentially customers, if not maybe creators or micro influencers, you know, nano or micro influencers, it's thinking about just all of the faces that can be part of the story that you're telling.
Yeah. I really love what you said too about intended audience, because it goes back to the, you know, why and who and what are we making for? It's the same stuff that you do when you're making an actual physical product good, right? Why does this product need to exist? Who am I making this for? What problem do they have that I'm trying to solve? How am I getting it to them? It's all the same stuff, but instead of the content as a part of selling your product, the content is its own product, which, you know, is a leap for a lot of us, because we already have a product that's rather challenging to sell. So now we just have to make a second business, essentially, which, you know, is fine. It's par for the course, but you know, it's good to know, though. I think where we are happy is that the polish is out and the over-edited and the over sort of scripted is out. And people are used to grittier film styles. You don't need to hire a whole camera crew for, you know, 6 weeks to film perfect, you know, episodes. Like, there's a grittier way to do it. And that does seem that that's what people are looking for. So that's good. That's very good news because it's expensive.
It is expensive. I mean, I will say, it's funny, Emma Chamberlain, who's like one of Teen's favorite influencers, or Gen Z's favorite influencers, like, she did say once, she's kind of, you know, one of the people that was credited with pioneering this very relatable raw style. And she said it actually took her as long to create this like real raw relatable style as it did the more produced. So it's not necessarily less time consuming. It might be less expensive, but I think you're still, production costs have gone down, but you're still being very thoughtful and intentional about what you're doing. So it's not sloppy. Like, I don't think you know, that's just one thing that I think I want to get across is like, you're not trading like high production value for just like, you know, sloppy photo or video. There's still a lot of thought, that goes into what it is that you're doing.
It's like cosplaying authenticity.
That's a good way.
Well, no, I mean, and it's interesting. This is a question for you that is just sort of probably not even researchable, but just your gut instinct. So, you know, everything swings cyclical back and forth. Do you think that, you know, similar to, I don't know, I interviewed someone a couple, I guess like about a year ago, and he was talking about, you know, design, brand design, and how everything was very pastel-y and very sort of like Glossier-ish until it became the Burger King rebrand where everything's sort of 70s and sort of retro colors and super punchy. And then there's that like kind of loud, crazy, bright color blast in your face, you know, and everything is in response to the thing that came before. Do you see it shifting back anytime soon? Like, do you feel like this is, you know, maybe a couple of years of this, and then it's going to get back to that sort of more precious, more curated, very lovely, light touch kind of looking, highly edited vibe?
Yes. How many years it takes us to get there? Like, that's hard to predict, but like, yes, everything is cyclical. You know, like some of the original influencers were bloggers in the early, you know, 2000, mid 2000s. And now all of a sudden blogs are making a comeback. Like, it took, you know, 15 years, but blogs are back. I don't know that blogs actually ever went away, but it's just that idea of like blogs are back, newsletters are back. So yeah, I think things always come around again. And will it get more polished? Probably. I think depending on technology, depending on, you know, AI, I think AI is going to play a big role in that. Like, what AI allows people to do, you know, like, I feel like most of what I've seen with AI, has been geared towards like, perfecting things. And so, you know, polishing things, editing things. So I don't know that AI necessarily, like, I think AI, as we, the tools that are available right now, would be very hard to ask or prompt AI for like, make it a little bit raw, make it a little rough, and make it look like real and human. Like, I don't think AI is actually capable of that right now. And that's
Actually funny that you said that, because I was writing, I had to write like a long form bio for something. And I took my bio and I was like, make this a little longer. Like, and then it was like, it was very AI-ish. It was like all these words that I would never use. And then I was like, make it a little more relatable, you know, and make it a little less verby and wordy. And, you know,
if we use, if we can, you know, like the AI usage continues to increase, it's like, it kind of goes one of two ways. Either like AI starts to like bring that polish back just because that's what AI does, or does AI get smarter and the people who are, you know, building the AI tools manage to like inject more humanity into it. And so it like can start to replicate a little bit of the, like the imperfections that we're currently seeing. And that is a trend right now. So it's like, yes, inevitably the polish will come back. When and how soon, it's just, it's hard to predict.
I was listening to Pivot. I don't know if you do you listen to Pivot with Scott Galloway and Kara. Yeah. So it's like, I love it, but I'm not even in the world really of like big advertising, but they had this guest on and he was talking about, you know, I guess like advertisers just really de-risking where they're putting their spend and why that just means like no Twitter basically. Mm-hmm. But that, and he was saying that there is this move back to, you know, reliable, not super clickbaity, more kind of grown up in a way news sources, and, you know, not this like listicle thing where you show up, but it's that he was just talking about, I guess, like quality over quantity. And he was saying that there is a shift back to like what you were saying with experts. You know, it's weird, right? Because on one hand, we have so much information coming at us all the time, and we're ever more segmented and siloed that, but then these trusted voices matter more than ever. And they're back, you know, the blogger, the newsletter writer, the expert. And when a brand can partner with those folks, maybe the reach isn't as big, but it's a better, more quality ad spend.
Yeah.
Does that track?
More, like you said, it's like, I think either thinking of it as like the expert or the curator, like, you know, if it's more kind of lifestyle driven, thinking about the people, like I'm thinking of the old school magazine editor that like, you know, if you read Vogue or Allure or like Food and Wine or Bon Appetit or Gourmet or whatever it was like, they went through lots and lots of product and picked out the best. And I think that that's what we're seeing now, like on blogs, in newsletters, even on social, you know, people are listing their favorite things. And I think it's just like finding those trusted voices and listening to what they're saying. And like you said, I do think the reach is going down because everything is getting so fragmented, because I think brand reach is going down. I think creator reach is going down as well. I don't think, creators aren't necessarily reaching more people. But I think, like you said, they're kind of the intent, like the quality is there, or like the audience intent. Like these are people who are actually interested in, you know, whatever it
what
is, like
you have to offer,
sauce, like, you know, baking products, like whatever it is that you're selling. This is like an invested audience that's really interested.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. Okay. So you mentioned it earlier, but you were talking about what TikTok is sort of favoring. And, you know, one of the things that you said was TikTok Shop. So I was at this consumer conference the other day, and Dan Frommer from The New Consumer put out this report about, it had a bunch of things, but one of them was about TikTok Shop, and it's selling these, like, you know, this Unbrush hairbrush sold 670,000 units, like in the last whatever it was, like short amount of time, or this like teeth whitening thing and shapewear. Like it seems like it's selling stuff. It would be a very big jump for me to tell my team, like, actually we should like lean into TikTok Shop for a condiment. But on the other hand, retail sales are like the cycles are getting much longer because of labor in the stores. So it'd be great to have another type of Amazon where you could actually track and sell directly to consumers, even if you are paying the platform and you have to play by their rules. You know, you can go on there when you want and you can spend what you want. So part of me is like, that'd be cool. The other part of me is like, I don't know. So I'm curious your thoughts about TikTok Shop.
So I think TikTok Shop is going to be a bit of a struggle for them. And that's very anecdotal. I think we're going to have to wait to see the final numbers come out. I think the numbers right now are heavily subsidized. It was the information, I think, that got an exclusive article about how much money, I think it was $500 million, that ByteDance was willing to lose on subsidizing various, like whether it was shipping or, you know, like promotions, all kinds of different things. So right. I think there's things sense. Where, yeah, I mean, there's stores where like they're selling at like 90% discount where, you know, mm-hmm. of course people are going to be buying things, you know, once those subsidies run out, once people yep. have any kind of difficulty returning products or like getting customer service, especially with like some of these things that you don't know where they're coming from. You right. don't know that much about the vendor. You know, I think that the first few months, TikTok is promoting this heavily. They're going out to creators. They're going out to brands. They've got partnerships. I think I saw it, like there was a recent story where it was like they're going out to businesses and they're encouraging that people are live streaming for like a minimum of 2 hours at a time.
Right.
TikTok shops. And so I think like that big, heavy push, all of those subsidies, I think at the beginning, we're going to see a lot of like initially impressive numbers around, mm-hmm. you know, you'll get brands that'll say, oh, it's amazing. We sold $100,000, $1 million, right. $5 million worth
of. A lot of shapewear. Uh-huh.
You know, some, yeah, some, you know, probably also like very inexpensive or heavily discounted mm-hmm. item. Mm-hmm. And then it's, but okay, let's see. Like in the next 6 months, when these subsidies end, once the novelty has worn off, once creators realize that, and brands, that it is very difficult to live stream for, you know, 2 hours, 6 hours, 8 hours yeah. at a time. And that is a specialty. Like just showing up on doing social media and showing up on video, right. that's its own specialty. And you know, like I've said this all, if you're comfortable, if you can do it, live streaming, that's its whole, you know, that's a whole different thing. If you're not on QVC, like you don't necessarily know how to live stream. And so if you've mm-hmm. never thought about doing some sort of like home shopping network or QVC, you're not necessarily suited for, you know, right. getting into TikTok shop.
Oh, wow.
So I think we're going to have to wait and see the data. And I think there's right. this kind of, it sounds like, you know, you're going through this as well. Like everybody's a little bit like hesitating, like, do we jump on this because it turns out to be the next Amazon mm-hmm. or 6 to 12 months from now, has this like disappeared because mm-hmm. what worked in China does not work for a right. North American audience. There's a yeah. lot for TikTok to be happy about this year. Like they are after YouTube, they're the second, you know, most like favorite app for teenagers. They mm-hmm. Consistently rate for like most time spent on the app. There's like a lot of reasons that YouTube should be happy, specifically more around like it's entertaining content, like it's streaming content. It's an entertainment platform, right. you know, to most people, but they don't necessarily want to be that. They're trying to reinvent mm-hmm. themselves. Or, you know, maybe this was the plan all along. It's just that they didn't roll it out until now. And to me, the jury's still out.
I mean, it is interesting because on one hand, there's never been as many sales or marketing channels. I mean, there's so many. Mm-hmm. And we kind of feel like we have to be everything, everywhere, all at once. And on the other hand, you know, if it's going to take 18 months for a retailer to be able to get your product or your new product or whatever it is on their shelves, because it's just, you know, it's like, you know, it's heavier. It's people and it's boxes and it's, you know, trucks. And somehow it's just so much lighter when it's e-commerce. We are kind of like, I think we're all sort of like, is there any place where we can be selling, where we can, you know, maybe impact our own destiny a little bit more? The sales cycle's a little shorter. And right now, Amazon's looking pretty good. You know, if you have a shelf-stable product and it's pretty lightweight and you can figure out the pricing, the margin isn't terrible. And so, you know, another Amazon type of thing for brands is kind of appealing. But it doesn't sound like I'm going to be investing in TikTok shop just yet. I'm going to hold off. So thank you for that. I have another question. We love Pinterest. I'm a Pinterest person since 2010. We have like over 200,000 followers on Pinterest. It is a magical place. I think it has all the nice parts without some of the yucky parts. I don't think Pinterest TV quite nailed it. They were trying to do something like a QVC also. I think brands are trying to figure out how to leverage Pinterest. I don't know that it converts either. What are your general thoughts on it? Where do you think it goes? How do you think brands can optimize Pinterest? Because it's a lovely, it's really lovely. It's creative and it's friendly, you know?
It is a lovely, creative, friendly platform. You know, Pinterest is tricky and I've struggled with this. I feel like I've been on the platform probably about as long as you have and I struggle with Pinterest. I think it's a lovely place to be. It is good for search. It comes up high in search results. So if you post content about your product, about your brand, and, you know, and you use all the keywords, and especially pay attention to the trend cycles and the holidays and the schedule that Pinterest sends out, they're very good at communicating with brands when you should post stuff. So I think if you pay attention to all those things, you know, I think it's very good for search. Surprisingly, teenagers make up more than 40% of their active monthly users right now. And it's like their fastest growing users are teens. So I think if you have a product that's appealing to a younger audience, that's a really good place to be. But
I did buy something off of Pinterest today. I bought this, I was scrolling and they must know that I'm like in my 50s or something because there was this like face mask that like you peel off and it like evens out your complexion and gets rid of, you know, dark spots. And I was like, yep. And I swiped up and I Apple Paid and I was like, wow, they got me. I don't know how they knew that I would be interested in that. There must be something about what I do on my algorithm, but it was funny because I was like, I think this is the first thing I've ever bought off of Pinterest. Like the ad worked, which I was sort of like, huh.
And I think it's a little bit of a barbell where it's like, you've got an audience that's like, you know, at the kind of like the older end of the audience. And then you've got like a really like young audience. And I feel like the Pinterest teen audience, like, I don't even know what that experience looks like. I don't know what a teen feed looks like on Pinterest. Obviously not a teenager. I would be fascinated to look and see, you know, as somebody was mentioning, like their teenage daughter saves memes on Pinterest. And that's not my Pinterest feed, but I think it's interesting. No. I think Pinterest is probably grappling with this as well. Like you've got face masks and lifestyle products and, you know, brides planning for their weddings. And then meanwhile, you've got this like really fast growing audience of teenagers that are saving memes. And like, how do you serve both of those types of audiences? I don't know that I have any great advice on Pinterest, but I think it is a very positive platform. And it does not hurt to be on there. I think it's maybe probably one of the lower lift, like less effort required than the other platforms.
Yep. Yeah. And I mean, I will say that maybe it's because I'm sort of looking at tile a lot. You know, I wouldn't know about Zia Tile if not for Pinterest or, you know, some of these like hardware companies that, so it, maybe it's again, also just a little bit of, you know, industry, like home seems to be where they really shine, at least for me. But there's a lot of shapewear on there too.
Yeah, it's anything lifestyle. It's food, fashion, beauty, home. You know, it's all of those things that are really visual, that are kind of like aspirational or inspirational. They do really well with that. And then clearly there's an audience, there's a new audience and, you know, memes. Memes. Yeah. So I don't know how you advertise against that.
I wonder if I could make a meme with sauce. Okay. Well, the last one that I want to ask about is LinkedIn. Because I think you said LinkedIn is the new Twitter. That might've been you. I think you coined that. I am not on any other social media other than LinkedIn. I think it's fantastic. I love meeting people through it. I think it's an absolute network builder. It's a great place for me to talk about business things, not just like this is my dog. And yet for brands, I'm curious if you think it's a new place to put content as brands, or if it really is more, you know, me as the founder talking about our new product, or we got this new distribution, or here are my five tips for not, you know, burnout or whatever it is. Like, what, how do you think LinkedIn's going to evolve? And like, specifically for founders of emerging brands, is there something that we should be leveraging or thinking about that we aren't at the moment?
You know, I think LinkedIn, like I hope I coined LinkedIn as the new Twitter, but somebody else probably said it. I probably read that somewhere, but I do believe it. I think LinkedIn benefits a little bit like Pinterest. They're also, you know, Gen Z is one of their fastest growing demographics, mm-hmm. You know, which kind of makes sense. They're joining the workforce. They're going to be joining LinkedIn looking for careers. Yeah. You're going to read a lot of predictions about how there's going to be a lot of B2B creators or influencers on the platforms. But I think mm-hmm. that's not the only thing to look for. One of the other things that I'm seeing on LinkedIn is a lot of social media managers are, you know, either Gen Z or, you know, maybe young millennials. They're the people that are posting as brands on LinkedIn. And so if you look at, I've noticed this a lot with software companies, especially HubSpot, SEMrush, Vista Social, different companies that if you go look at their feeds, they are using LinkedIn in a completely different way than a lot of, you know, the more traditional way that we have seen brands use LinkedIn. So I think, again, if you're a startup or a solopreneur, you know, you're a founder, you have an advantage. People or, you know, personal posts, personal pages get a lot more reach on LinkedIn than brands do. So I think first things first, always best to post as yourself, as the founder of the company, to show up on LinkedIn and talk about the company, talk about the success, talk about, shine a spotlight on the employees, talk about what you're doing, show up in a way also that's like, you know, I don't know that you need to be like Twitter, but I'm seeing kind of like a blend of like, it's a little bit of Twitter, it's a little bit of Instagram. We're not going quite like, here's what I ate for breakfast, but it's definitely kind of like a little bit more of a casual, candid voice than we have known of the platform. But then also, yes, I do see brands showing up in a little bit more of an informal way than they have been on LinkedIn. And they're still sharing interesting information or things that are, you know, on brand for them. But I think just in a way that maybe we were more used to them sharing on Twitter, where it might have been a little bit more conversational and a little bit less polished. You know, again, I think LinkedIn is like all of the other platforms. We're moving away from a little bit less formal, a little less polished. And like LinkedIn is part of that.
No, it makes sense. It's like you're unbuttoning a little bit, but you're not like completely untucking the shirt. You're just, you know, you're like loosening it up just a tad, which feels more real and authentic and relatable. And that's amazing. Okay. We covered so many things. Did I forget anything, Leah? Is there something you're dying to tell everyone that I forgot to ask you about?
No, I think we, you know, it's like show up as yourself, tell your story. We're moving away from polish. And I think it's just, you know, the platform is going to depend on where you're comfortable, where you like posting, and then thinking about the intended audience and thinking about a little bit, like you said, it's like you're building a company, you're building a media business at the same time, and you're thinking about audience. And so like with LinkedIn, I think it's an advantage, you know, take advantage of the audience that's on LinkedIn, thinking about these might be investors, these might be potential partners.
Yeah, no, that all makes so much sense. And this has been like the best hour ever. And I can't thank you enough, Leah, for coming on the show and for just spilling all of this wisdom. You're going to make a lot of people really happy. So thank you.
I appreciate it. Thanks, Allie.
And Liam, thank you as always for engineering. Obviously, I am not particularly tech savvy, as everyone knows. So without you and Heritage Radio, I would not be able to do this every week. And listeners, welcome back. Happy New Year. And I'll be back next week with another episode of In the Sauce.
In the Sauce is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.